Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, my sister Kay and I are going to have a spoiler-filled discussion about season 4 of The Last Ship. We just finished watching that. That's a show on TNT. We've talked about the previous seasons. Mm-hmm. And it is based on a novel that was done many decades back. And they've kept the spirit of it, but obviously have changed and updated the storyline. And for the first two seasons, it was really all about a virus that was wiping out humanity. Mm-hmm. Third season was there were some people who were naturally immune. And there was some warfare going on there because they thought they were the chosen one. This season picks up 16 months later, and the virus has jumped from the animal kingdom to the plant kingdom. And it's now, instead of the Red Death, is the Red Rust, which I always thought was a weird name, but okay.
Yeah.
And it's killing off the crops.
Yeah.
So it's going to cause mass starvation. So much like there was a ancient bird or whatever it was in the first season that was the key to the cure, this time there were some ancient nuts or whatever, seeds or whatever.
Yeah.
That were the key to the cure. And they go through a similar-ish, but reasonably different kind of an arc. Get the key component, can we find the cure, etc. I will say that this season felt a bit more warfare-ish. There were a lot of deaths on the crew of the Nathan James. There was a lot more of everything from fist fighting to ship-to-ship fighting to, you know, on up and down.
Well, and there was a lot more, I'm willing to slit his throat versus choke him out and leave him unconscious while we do the mission.
Well, so. Because I think also at this point, the brink they were on was much further.
Well, and it was also situations where they couldn't afford for that person to regain consciousness while the mission was taking place.
Right. Between that and the fact that people at home were literally starving to death at the point.
Yeah. Well, and not just people at home. The world over.
No matter what nation you were from, your people at home were starving to death.
Yeah.
And Peter Weller was I can't really say a guest star. He was part of the cast this season.
Yeah.
Really well used.
Well, back first season, really our rival in the search for the cure was the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say this season, the Greeks and Peter Weller took that position.
Well, and last season, a lot of it was the Japanese.
Yes.
So they've encountered a number of navies.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one where they were going up against, this was almost all set in the Mediterranean. And they were like four Greek ships by the end of it that they had to deal with. And it was funny because once they set their mind to, well, let's take them down, those ships started dropping pretty fast.
Yeah.
But they also did quite a few episodes where it's the, you know, whether you can see the other ship or not, it's which captain is outthinking the other one.
Yes.
And it was funny because the Greeks had at least three, four captains and three or four ships at the outset. The Nathan James had the one ship, but also three captains.
But there was a very different attitude in terms of the Greeks had a tenuous hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Nathan James was peers with respect for one another.
The Nathan James was much more unified in their mission and their goal. And while they didn't always see it eye to eye, and even at times there was a little bit of question in the hierarchy before Chandler re-signed up, re-enlisted.
Yeah.
But it was dealt with, and even then, while there was some, not really confusion.
Tension.
Uncertainty. Everyone knew, even if he wasn't in uniform, they were working towards similar goals, if not the exact same goal.
Yeah.
There was the aspect with Fletcher, the guy on loan from the British, which reminded me of, I guess it was the scientist or whatever in the first season.
Yes.
Of, can we trust him? Can we not? He's working with us. He's not totally working with us.
Yeah.
But again, it was different enough.
Yes.
It was evocative of, but not, oh geez, they're telling the same story again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a couple of things that I was expecting a little bit more payoff on than we got. The Master Chief getting injured. I felt didn't really have a solid payoff. Burke's brother getting injured in the pilot never really, I mean, there was a character arc for Burke as a result of that.
Yeah.
But not one with payoff.
Yeah.
And the bit with Tex's daughter, there was some good stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't have the end note on the last episode to really kind of, okay, she's gone from the crew's kind of adopted her. No, she's part of the crew.
Yeah.
And they made moves in that direction, but they didn't, in my mind, totally plant the ending on that subplot.
Yeah.
The stuff they were doing with her and Diaz, I thought was really good.
Yeah. Well, and the pilot being the surrogate father to her
mm-hmm.
was playing very well.
Well, and the Master Chief being the surrogate father to Diaz.
Yeah.
And having trained him up and stuff. And Diaz was one of the kid rebels or whatever we'd seen second season? Third, maybe?
Second, I think, because he was second. In New Orleans.
Yeah. So.
And that's one of the things that I both love and kind of hate about the show. Just a huge cast. I don't think it's even fair to call it an ensemble. I mean, if you're going to name just the key pivotal people, yes, okay, ensemble cast. But if you were going to try and list every character we know, you're going down through Dr. Rios and Mejia up the navigator up on the bridge, and you would be going through dozens of people, the guy down in engineering.
Well, it reminds me of Babylon 5 in that respect, where it had in season 1 the title cast, you know, the ones in the title credits or whatever, and then every season a couple of people would come in and go, you know, add a few, take a few out. And here that's kind of expanded to the guest stars, even, of do we get the Doctor, who's a guest star, versus a title cast member.
But I guess here, it feels like you add 8 or 10 in and only 2 rotate out. You know what I mean?
This season, though, we lost O'Connor.
Very true.
We lost sidekick to the Doctor.
Yes, Hagen.
Hagen, but he seemed to be introduced to kill off.
Yes.
But there were a couple of others. Burke's brother was kicked off to the side.
Yeah. And I think part of that was simply because they needed to make room for the Greeks.
I think some of it was that, but I think they also wanted to have a feeling of there are stakes.
Oh, yes, definitely. But
these
I meant
people
like,
don't come out unscathed.
Like Burke's brother. If we were going to do sibling dynamics, then were we going to do it with the Burke siblings, or were we going to do it with Giorgio and Lucia?
Flip side, if you had sibling dynamics on both sides to compare.
Yes.
You could have done that. But it set the remaining Burke on a path of, we can't trust these refugees.
Yeah.
And there was that side arc, but it felt like it wasn't ever really pulled, I don't say front and center, because we got quite a bit of it, but it didn't have...
It didn't have any payoff because it was only really up front. He was gun-shy, is how it came across.
Gun-shy, and then at one point he was about ready to shoot, I think, the
But it was all basically on the boat where they rescued them. Once they got them back to the Nathan James, it wasn't a recurring theme.
I wonder if the scene where Miller gets shot by the sniper was supposed to be the, okay, he's gotten over it, we're not going to lose another one, and was supposed to be the end of that?
It was. I genuinely think it was, but for me, it didn't play as the, I'm doing for Miller what I wasn't able to do for my brother.
And or, I forgive Miller for not having spoken up soon enough.
Yes.
If he'd been a little faster, my brother would still be okay.
Yeah.
I think there were a couple of times where they tried to end that arc, but that ending just didn't work for me, or didn't have the payoff, or... Either
it didn't
to the
have
extent
the,
or the way I was looking for it.
It didn't have the vibrancy I wanted.
Yeah.
And another example of that is the married couple, the Greens, in the infirmary at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That was a cute scene, but it didn't have the vibrancy I wanted.
I would not have had the guy, Green, in the medical stuff there at the end. I wouldn't have had him as hurt. I would have had him looking after Wolf, okay, Wolf's gonna be all right, my team's good, okay, we're cool, she saved the ship, we're good, and those two kind of in the Hilo Bay as that last Zodiac or whatever comes back with Diaz and Noland, Tex's daughter, and them saying these two are about to hook up, and they basically the impression we would get is they're going off to say, here's what you can do, here's what you can't, here's how to handle this.
See, I'm torn between that or having them overhear the conversation between Chandler and Slattery of what's next, go home, and have him just put his arm around her and say, that sounds kind of nice, doesn't it? Because we started the season with them sending their kid back to the U.S. without them.
There are a couple of different ways, and it's not even mutually exclusive. They could have done both.
Yes.
There are a couple of things they could have done to really kind of land that ending a little bit more. And at the end, I'm honestly a little unclear of, they've got a plant with the cure. Is that enough? I mean, they gave some exposition implying, yes, we've now saved the world again.
Yeah, because they've got the bugs, and the bugs eating the plant are what will spread the cure.
Yeah.
Much the way that the humans spread the cure in St. Louis.
I was always expecting them to basically have a new crop that they could go plant and it would survive anywhere, kind of a...
Yeah, me too. I never fully understood that it was the bugs who had spread the red rust, and thus bugs... I hadn't made that connection.
And they may have even mentioned it early on, but by that point we didn't have a context to appreciate it in. The other thing that they set up with Slatterly that they had to do so part of the arc or part of the season would make sense was setting us up the Nostros drug, where you take this and it's kind of you're reliving part of your past. Those that have died that you miss are essentially back. You're back in that time.
You're back in, it came across as you're back in your happiest memory with them in the best way possible. There's nothing angry, sad, upsetting about it. You're having the most wonderful day of your life with them, and it's a moment you never want to leave.
Well, and this is set in a world where everybody has the I miss so-and-so, I lost my parent, my brother, my father, my, you know.
You've survived the plague.
Exactly. That's my point, is everybody is got something that is makes them a prime target for this.
Yes.
Whereas in this, in the real world, there are a lot of people. Oh, I miss my grandmother, you know, or who, whatever it would be, you know. But for many people, they haven't necessarily suffered that loss, or so it's an isolated incident, versus in this world, which has been decimated.
Yeah.
You can't not have lost multiple people.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. But again, the way you described that, which I thought was accurate from what we saw with Slattery, was you're in that fondest memory, that happy time, and you don't want to leave. And then when we get introduced to Christos, the Velik's son, Velik being played by Peter Weller, the evil scientist here, the misguided, or the hippie scientist, we'll say. You know, you called it, I think from the minute we saw him, of, I don't think this guy's here.
Well, and what I was picking up on was nobody else is interacting with him, talking to him, walking around him even. And that was just very suspicious to me.
And you were right for that. What got me with that was not just that you called it, but when we later, and much later, find out that Velik is taking Nostros under more controlled circumstances or whatever, but instead of living a past memory, he's bringing a past loved one to the present. Nostros worked differently for him.
He was a scientist. He understood what it was. So he was brewing a tea and taking it in small enough doses. Whereas when Slattery had gotten it, he had basically been given a big amount and told, chug it, while he was sick.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It was just...
The scientist was using it to guide his hallucinations, and he knew he
essentially was lucid dreaming while you were awake.
Yes, and he knew that's what he was doing.
Whereas Slattery was hit unaware, and even the ones that Chandler had seen before on it were overdosing, as using it as an escapist drug.
Yes.
Versus arguably Velik was using it for quote-unquote mind enhancement or whatever, you know? Again, playing into the hippie attitude. The character had. I thought he was an interesting foil for them to be going up against. I thought the Greek Navy was well used. But I really think on the enemy side, the character that was the most fun was Giorgio. He reminded me of essentially Johnny Depp.
I'll give you that.
He was fun to watch. I'm not saying he was brilliant. I'm not saying he was the mastermind or anything of the sort. But just seeing him go from acting like he's in control and just being constantly derided by his father, and then realizing later his sister's really been the one in charge the whole time.
Yeah.
Although he thought it was him. You know, that all was fun to watch.
What frustrated me was when he finally realized that she was using the Nostos during the day, not just at night, and we never got what she was seeing or experiencing on it.
I think she was taking it an even lower dose than her father and using it just to manage the stress.
Okay, so no hallucinations.
No hallucinations.
For her. Okay.
Just to kind of chill her out, calm her down so she could think clearly. But again, that was never kind of clearly set up.
Yeah.
And she was okay, but she didn't kind of chew up the scenery quite the way Giorgio did.
Yeah.
And there was a definite survivor aspect of Giorgio. I expected him to be the last sibling surviving, and I expected him to turn on his dad.
I expected him to be the one standing with the seeds, bargaining at the end.
I'm not even sure if it would necessarily have been bargaining. It set me up as a king and you can have these.
Yeah.
You know, let me go have my island kingdom, leave me alone.
When he realized that the Nostos had been brewed into, if you will, the plant with the cure, he felt betrayed.
Yeah.
When he realized he was the only family member not consuming, not a drug addict, he felt betrayed.
Well, it was interesting at the beginning when we got Chandler, who's out of the Navy in Greece, and kind of winds up trying to figure out what's up with Giorgio and all of this stuff, getting into this fight club kind of a setup, realizing that they're using these fighters as a, you know, bread and circuses kind of a thing, and how that dovetails into the adventure that the Nathan Janes is having.
Yeah.
And there was a certain nice, you know, convergence there. It was a good way to get him back on the ship in an uncontrived manner. But when he goes from essentially being called Hercules as the fighter, and then later he's on the Nathan James and they've got the footage that we'd seen being recorded.
Yeah.
And it was a nice payoff. And then also when they go and find the other Ares and the other fighters.
Yeah.
That have been drugged with this Nostros tour, they're just docile.
I thought Ares was excellent when they found him in the prison.
Yeah.
You know, when he was saying that the food is the drug, and kind of the, I know I don't want any more of the drug, but the food is the drug, kind of the, it's addictive. You need food. You have to consume it. I don't want to be on the drug. I hate the effects.
But he can't fight the urge.
Yeah.
I would think that if in, say, the next season they were to find a remote village or whatever that had been doused with this stuff, they would find that potentially people had let their passions overrun them, you know? I'm not entirely sure exactly what format that would take, but you know what I mean? It's, you can't resist your whatever OCD sort of a thing you've got.
Well, and I mean, it, the whole idea that the crazy doctor was going with was he wanted to get rid of random acts of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And this was going to tamp down the aggression. And one of the things I loved with Ares was he couldn't fight back. He couldn't defend himself, really. But he could step in front of a bullet meant for someone else.
Yes. He couldn't openly challenge somebody, but he could stand in the way.
Yeah.
There was some good stuff with that. And for a little bit in that scene, I was wondering if he was going to make it back to the Nathan James. They were going to study, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Study his blood. And yeah.
So they did some very interesting things over the course of the season. In terms of how far would you go? Everyone is starving. I mean, the regular rules are kind of out, but you've still got to remain true to who you are. Who is that?
Yeah.
And this was definitely a bit of a season where Chandler was kind of discovering himself, as were a few other characters.
Yeah.
You know, Burke was kind of rediscovering who he is or was in some degree. The Greens were kind of, I don't say reassessing their relationship, but had gotten to the maturity where it's like, yes, we can serve together, not fraternize, even though we are married. The passion the crew has on the Nathan James for both the reputation the Nathan James has and this save the world thing.
Yeah.
Without necessarily a hero's attitude, but this is where they belong.
Exactly. They can recognize that saving the world is what comes first.
Yes, but to me, it's not that they're doing it for the glory or for the saving of the world.
No.
They're doing it because it has to be done.
Yeah. They're doing it because they can't imagine saying bye or doing anything else.
They can't not.
Yeah.
Again, we saw a little of that with the Master Chief. Saw that with Gator at the end when it's like, hey, permission to do the boarding party. Turns out to be an excellent shot. And he's like, nobody asked.
Yeah.
Which surprised me because I think if you go back to the first season, that's when Miller and a few others were getting trained to do this.
Yeah.
So I thought they did ask.
Yeah.
And it may have been they asked selectively.
Mm. Well, and there was definitely a, you know, people with mandatory to run the ship skills.
Yeah. And I think if we were to go back to that episode first season, it may be that Chandler had told Green or Burke, go ask around.
Yeah.
You know, see if you can find a couple of people or whatever, not open to the ship kind of a thing. Yeah. The other character I think that's worth talking about who didn't have a major role this season is Henderson. She was on the bridge. Officer of the day and stuff. But compared to second season, where she was front and center for a lot of it, her mother was there.
Yeah.
A major, pivotal character. I like how they kept her around. I like how they used her. But she was a glorified extra to a degree.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of where I was saying it's beyond being a large ensemble cast. It is just a huge crew.
It would be interesting to go back through the series, and as we see characters like Bacon first season,
yeah,
or a few others, it's like, okay, this is a recurring character. They have a name. We're expected to recognize them when we see them. Mm-hmm. They speak up. They do things.
Yeah.
Not just, hey, he's a guy in the background, or, hey, Fred, go do something. Well, who the hell's Fred? We never see Fred again.
Yeah.
He doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And how many kind of go from the there to fill up the scene sort of a thing to, I mean, even Diaz, up until this season, he was there, but not to the degree, I mean, he was in every episode. We see him. He's important. Yeah. He's doing...
Well, he's on the bridge steering the ship.
He's steering the ship. This is a guy they picked up, you know, almost out of nowhere or whatever, off the street, so to speak.
Yeah.
And this is the best guy they've got to run the ship, and he's doing a great job.
He's a homeless kid who enlisted because the Navy gave him purpose.
I love the bit in the final episode when Slatterly's like, okay, bring her up to the side or whatever. And he's like, yep, and don't hit anything. Got it. As if he's been chided before.
Yes, yes.
It gives lines like that imply a backstory that you can just imagine. Geez, I wonder why he had to say that. Did he almost hit something? Did he hit something? Was Slatterly upset? Was he laughing? What was going on? You know, there's just so many things that an otherwise innocuous line of dialogue. And then you follow it up with sort of, oh, belay that order. Slam that puppy, you know, kind of a thing. Knock it out, you know. And of course, Adam Baldwin just does a terrific job.
He does, yeah.
I mean, loved him in Firefly, loved him in Chuck.
Well, one of the scenes I loved towards the end here is when they were bouncing around with the what should we do in this situation, and Slattery and Chandler come up with, we should do the Kennedy maneuver. And all of a sudden it's, oh, yeah, I heard she survived. And he goes, really? And
well, Maitland is like, John F. Kennedy? And he's like, no, it's this one in the instructor's school. And, well, she didn't survive. And they're starting to reminisce. And he's like, can somebody just tell me what the maneuver is? Yes. Followed by when he comes up with a maneuver, it's like, this will be the Maitland maneuver, right? Ha ha. See, I can do it too. You
know. Yes, yes.
I liked how Slatterly was still captain of the ship.
Yes.
But Chandler was there as the tactician, as and old home, old Friendsweek or whatever, you know, kind of a thing, because Slatterly and Chandler had worked together so much so long, they have that shorthand. Maitland's still, you know, odd man out.
Yeah.
Even though he's been pulled into the fold and is trusted, he doesn't have that history with them.
Yeah.
Now, what would have been interesting is if at one point Maitland and Slatterly had that sort of exchange.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, yeah, we did this last month or last year or whatever while you were, you know, cruising the Mediterranean or whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of a shorthand. And again, when they're in either on the bridge or CIC or whatever, and they're trying to outthink the Greek or whoever they're going up against.
Yeah.
I love those scenes. Those are fun.
They do them well.
And this is a show that obviously is set on a naval vessel.
Yeah.
Yes, they film some stuff on it, but when they're doing these things where this ship is fighting three Greek ships, it's having to kind of dart between them or around them or avoid them or whatever, they don't have multiple ships to kind of go set this all up and go run these maneuvers with, much less dress one up as three of them up as Greek ships or something. Doesn't quite work. So there's definitely some computer graphics going on here.
Yeah.
And some of them, pretty blatantly computer graphics. But still good computer graphics.
You mean they didn't take four ships out in a horrible storm?
I also thought there was the one where they were, Green and Wolf were about to bomb the one.
Oh, yeah.
And as they're in the Zodiac, it's pretty clear this is a green screen kind of... yeah. Of course it is.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to do this. It's the only way to film this. And... it's not like it was a bad green screen or bad CG. It was just identifiable as such.
Yes.
But they sold what they were doing. They sold the ship in the storm, going through the other ships and all of those things. And to do these sorts of naval maneuvers and ship-to-ship fighting and stuff like that on a TV budget, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, they're clearly spending the appropriate money and got the right resources on that. They've got, as you've mentioned, an extensive cast, but all of them are very talented.
Yeah.
I mean, there hasn't been a one where I think, geez, you know, they had to use this guy because, well, I guess he was rated to actually sit in the chair and look like he knew how to fire the buttons or something or anything of the sort. Or, you know, he's probably the enlisted, you know, brother or whatever of their naval advisor. No, none of that. In Baywatch, there was the Michael Newman character.
Mm-hmm.
Who was an actual lifeguard.
Oh, how funny.
And at first he was there because, well, they're in the water a lot. You ought to have a lifeguard, you know, that
yeah,
kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Both as a consultant and you can actually have him around just in case you need him.
Yeah.
At least that's my understanding.
Yeah.
But, you know, he basically became one of the regulars on the show over the 10-year run or whatever. But it's one of those, I don't think, ever seen him in any other show as a regular because he's not an actor by trade.
Yeah.
He was doing some... none of that here. I mean, yes, there are probably a plethora of actual naval people, officers enlisted, whatever, that we've seen in the course of this in the background or other stuff like that. But it's not like they're trying to turn them into actors or anything of the sort. What I really love about the show is they portray the Navy in a very believable way, in a very heroic, admirable way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having grown up with a father who was career Navy and a public affairs officer to boot.
Yeah.
You know, I like it when the Navy is treated well in Hollywood and such. You know, it's easy to vilify, you know, the higher-ups, be it the admirals, the generals in the Army, you know, whatever, and that kind of stuff. Because any kind of big bureaucratic thing is susceptible to corruption. But what they did in the show is by isolating it pretty much entirely to just the crew of the Nathan James, they've gotten the advantages of that naval hierarchy and that long tradition and way of doing things, and also captured these guys have been living together on the ship forever and a day.
Yeah.
They are family in some way, shape, or form. Now, I've never served in the Navy. I don't know if this is really accurate or not, but it is believable. It is heroic. And even if it is wrong, it is most certainly respectful.
Yes.
You don't look at these people thinking, geez, they're the ones saving the world. We're doomed. No, it's like, of course they saved the world again. They struggled. They challenged. They persevered.
Yes.
They paid a price for this.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's one of the things I really respect about the show.
Yeah.
And again, the book it's based on is one that I believe was highly thought of by a number of people that later got into the Navy because of that sort of depiction and attitude of the thing, of these people. It's not that they're superheroes, but they are heroic in nature.
Yeah.
They're doing what needs to be done. There was an aspect at the end of the season of, well, we saved the world again.
Mm.
It's like, and I'm willing to bet next season, you're going to do it again.
Yeah.
At which point they're just showing off.
Well, there was part of me that was wondering just what catastrophe is still waiting.
I don't know, because...
I mean, the recurring themes are we need to cure something, we need to deal with betrayal.
Well, and global apocalypse.
Yeah.
We're dying, our food is dying. The next one I would almost go with would be an ecological disaster.
Well, and at the Comic-Con panels, they've talked a lot about the fact that they try to really fill the writing with the, we do have a sense of both purpose and hope, because we're focused on cure.
Mm-hmm.
not on living in this horrible state.
It's not that they're in a post-apocalyptic world. It's that they are trying to end the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And come back from it.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it challenging as to what is that next threat going to be. Because if you go with something like I suggested, like an ecological thing, and you know, oh, well, the polar ice cap is totally melted and we're flooding the world because it's a Navy show, why not? That doesn't work because you can't really, it's, how do you come back from that?
You can't unmelt the polar ice
cap. Exactly, you can't cure that.
Yeah.
So I don't know where they go next. The implication was it was not going to be Mediterranean based, it was going to be more US based.
Mm-hmm.
But we spent...
We've done Asia, we've done the Med, we've done North America and creeping into South and Central America.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what else is really, what would be the other archetypical naval theater, if you will. I don't know. So I'm curious about that. Certainly they opened up a few roles for next season. Do they get another helicopter? Do they get another pilot?
Yeah.
Do they have a few people come and go? How does that change up?
Well, and when we get back to America, do we find out what became of those walls that were being set up that were dividing America?
The implication is they've been taken down, but we don't know. Because, again, they solved that third season. That's when they put the president back in power. They'd shot the person who was in charge of the coup and all of that. But that's 16 months ago at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, but I guess, yeah.
But my point is, the assumption is it's all been done. We don't know.
Yeah.
Because the Red Rust has taken over and everyone's starving, even though presumably these regional governors had stockpiled food and all of that stuff.
In prisons.
In prisons, yes, of course. That's, well there, I guess. I am not sure where they would, could, or should go next season.
Yeah.
It's just, I hope they've got... I liked how the season had a nice beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
As did last season. It gives it a good focus, and there's no filler. They've got a good clear trajectory. I just don't know what that would be. And of course, I didn't see this one coming at all. They didn't have any clues. Mm-mm. And I like when they end on a note where they've got a few months to kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't like it when a show ends on the, well, we're going to have to deal with this at the beginning of next season.
Yeah.
And it's not just a cliffhanger. Sometimes it could be a reveal or whatever that sets that up. But it dictates the opening notes of the next season.
Mm-hmm.
So not doing that, I think, is benefited the show. And it allows them to start on a note that sets the scene how they want to set it and move in the direction they want to move.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a show I recommend. It's on TNT. It's also, I think, on Netflix as a streaming thing. If not, I'm sure it's on one of the streaming services.
I'd have to double check.
This was a 10-episode season?
Yeah.
Previous was, I think, 13.
Yeah. It's a good show, though.
It's a good show, but it's one that is short enough that if you've got, like, a complete Saturday or whatever, you, in theory, could marathon it all that day.
Yeah. Well, and it's one that I do think I prefer it marathoned because the episodes build on each other. And it is, as you said, it's an arc. It's not episodic by any means.
It's... Each episode has a sense of completeness about it,
mm-hmm.
but they are chapters of a book. It's much like a Netflix show in that respect.
Yeah, I fully agree.
You know, you've got good pausing and stopping points at the end of every episode, but not a clean break like the end of a novel or a comic book trade paperback or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's not one that you've got to just sit down and plow through it all in one shot. You can watch it week to week if you want, but I agree, it benefits... from the building momentum of the more you can watch in a single sitting.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, I just get to the point where it's like, okay, I want to see what happens next.
Yeah, exactly.
I find it a fun and compelling story.
Yeah. And I like the world they've created. I mean, this season, I
hate the world they've created. Well, I do not like to live there.
Well, yeah.
Everyone dies. There's nothing to eat.
I think they've done a good job creating the world. Maybe I should say it that way. But this season, I had a few issues.
I would argue that they have done a good job creating the world of Nathan James, but not the world.
When I was starting to get really annoyed with Giorgio's boats going around and private helicopters with, how come he finds it so easy to get fuel?
Yeah. Those are the things that make me think the world building isn't as well done as it could be, because there's aspects of, like, the Greece that Chandler was in. really look all that post-apocalyptic.
I mean, Giorgio had no problem with a satellite phone. I mean, yeah. Just 2 years ago, we had no cell phones. So, I mean, I had a few issues.
Those are the things where it's easy to gloss over that because the reality of the bubble we're traveling in
yes.
is pretty solid.
Yeah.
But when they need to pull things from outside of that, like apparently there's enough food in this world that's starving to death and has just had people dying off by the droves, that it was pretty easy to find 40 or 50 really buff built guys for these fight clubs.
Well, they pseudo-explained that. Pseudo.
They get into this, they get fed well.
Mm-hmm. Giorgio feeds yeah. the winners.
It's just one of those things around the edges of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little fast and loose.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with that because it's never to the point of, oh, geez, you've got to be kidding me.
You can't drive an 18-wheeler through the plot holes, so I was happy.
Yeah, and there's things that if you dig, you would question, but they don't just smack you in the face. I mean,
yeah.
Little surprised the Greeks had that many boats because we hadn't seen them before. It seemed like, again, but we hadn't asked before.
Well, and I mean, the flip side of that is the Greece as a nation has the most citizens at sea. So to me, it is believable that if we went into a crisis situation, Greece would figure out how to end up with the most Navy ships, even if they hadn't started with the most Navy ships.
Right, right. I guess it comes down to trying to think how to phrase this. There are certain times where there's just conveniences. At the end of the season, oh yeah, we found a place to go gas up. It's not a problem anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it's the end of the season. I'm fine with that. It's not mission critical anymore.
Yeah.
You know, plot devices and gimmies like that suck when it's, geez, you were going to die, except you conveniently found this port out of nowhere with a full gas supply, whatever. That's cheap writing. Here, it's just, hey, you're winding down to end on a clean note and get to where you can be where you want to be next season.
Mm-hmm.
Not a problem. You've provided a compelling threat. You've ramped it up. There were good character arcs, fun characters and scenes and so forth. It resolved in a enjoyable and believable manner. Now, as you're cleaning up stuff, if there's little conveniences as you're kind of winding down and unsetting the scene, if you will, not a problem.
Now, are you going to look at genetically modified food differently after this?
Oh, I've always looked poorly at genetically modified food.
Okay, just curious.
I got food allergies. The last thing I want them to do is screw up and put gluten in something that doesn't need it. But that's just me.
Okay. Not that it makes you aggressive or anything.
No, no. Anything else? Are we good?
We're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.